Hello, and welcome to another edition of New Books in Systems and Cybernetics, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. I'm your host, Tom Scholt, from the University of British Columbia. In their volume, New Horizons for Second Order Cybernetics, out from World Scientific in 2017, editors Alexander Riegler, Carl H. Mueller, and Stuart A. Umpleby have assembled almost 60 articles, including their own analyses, in order to test what they have dubbed the Klein-Martin hypothesis, that, quote, as a research program, second-order cybernetics was A, insufficiently developed, B, has had no sustainable consequences for other scientific disciplines in the past, and C, will remain mostly irrelevant in the future, end quote. Surveying the expansive terrain covered by the contributing authors from scientific domains such as mathematics, psychology, and consciousness research, and non-scientific ones such as design theory and theater studies, they conclude that while the first two claims of the Klein-Martin hypothesis must be confirmed, the third, regarding its future prospects, can be confidently rejected. By recreating for the first time second-order cybernetics in a systematic way as a comprehensive and transdisciplinary research program, and introducing the notion of endo-research, or research from within a domain of study, this volume positions the field to amplify its potential for facilitating increasing degrees of reflexivity across all fields of inquiry and endeavor in the 21st century. In my conversation with editor and master storyteller Carl Mueller, we revisit the two separate and often confused foundation moments of second-order cybernetics, tangle with grumpy students of Ross Ashby, celebrate Heinz von Förster's 80th birthday in a crowd of over 1,000 at Vienna's City Hall, and celebrate the virtues of being a slow learner. I hope you find your time with Carl as entertaining and stimulating as I always do. And just a little note for transparency's sake, I do have a piece in this book that we're about to talk about. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Carl Mueller. Carl Mueller, it is such a pleasure to welcome you to New Books in Systems and Cybernetics. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thanks, Tom. I'm very excited as well to talk with you and to share some ideas and thoughts.
So as is traditional on the channel and across the New Books Network, we'll start with just a question about your biography, your sort of academic intellectual trajectory, and how you traveled to an engagement with the field of cybernetics.
Maybe I should tell a very unusual story, how I came to cybernetics. I'm not the youngest person anymore, so I'm 65 this year. And interestingly enough, I had a very interesting high school not in Vienna, but in Leoben in Styria. And we had a teacher there. He was responsible for religion or religious as a subject. And he was a conservative person, and he was one of 20 important young conservative persons back in the period of 66 to 1970, and in 68, I was on the fifth or sixth grade of the high school in Leoben. He wrote an article. We had an annual report of the school, and here he wrote a report about cybernetics. And this was in 1968, and he, in these five or six pages, he said, cybernetics will become the most important intellectual field for the rest of the 20th century. And he gave a very short outline of what cybernetics is, referring to the book of Norbert Wiener. And I remember quite vividly, he also gave a lecture there was a lecture hall in Leoben. Leoben is a very small town, roughly 200 kilometers away from Vienna. And he talked about cybernetics there as well. And from these weeks onward, cybernetics became a very special field and had a very special meaning for me. And I tried to learn more about cybernetics. And as you probably know, one couldn't study cybernetics within the Austrian university system and so on. But cybernetics had some sort of magic touch from these articles onward. And I lost contact to cybernetics when I started studying at the University of Graz and then in the United States and so on. But when in the 1980s I established some contacts with Heinz von Förster. And from then onward, cybernetics was again within my agenda. And then I had my very strong affair with cybernetics based on Heinz von Förster, whom I accompanied from the 80s until to the year 2002, when he actually died.
Mm-hmm. And what led you to seek out Heinz at that time?
this was also a rather funny incident. I was mid-80s and I was buying a lot of new books, trying to get hold of this new literature on self-organization and so on. And within this context, there were suddenly three books in German, one by Umberto Maturana, with articles of Umberto, one about Ernst von Glasersfeld, with articles of relevant articles of Ernst, and one with Heinz von Förster, with a lot of interesting articles by Heinz. They were all in a very special German publishing house, and I was attracted most to the book by Heinz because on page one, I saw that Heinz was born on the 13th of November. And Heinz added he was born on a Friday. It was Friday, the 13th of November. And I was immediately very much attracted because I was born on Friday, the 13th of November. And it turned out I was the only one who was actually born on Friday, the 13th of November. Heinz was in 1989, it was not a Friday, it was a Tuesday. And someone noted and wrote very angry email that how I promote fake news and because that's not a Friday, that's a Tuesday. And I said, okay, sorry. For Heinz, it was very natural. It had to be a Friday if it's the 13th of November. So this was the immediate attraction to, we had the same birthday, 13th of November.
Well, of course, Heinz as a magician was very practiced at sleight of hand as well, right? So we'll have to give him room for that one. You mentioned this magic touch that cybernetics had for you, even at a young age. Can you tell us a little bit about what what specifically about it gave it that magic touch that made you find it so compelling, even just back in high school?
It was simply the fact that when I was 15 or 16 years old, I never heard of cybernetics, this person who wrote this article, who made this lecture, he was very impressive as an intellectual person. He had three doctorates, one in theology, one in law, and there's a special doctorate PhD you could make at that point, at that time, if you had a law doctorate and wrote an additional dissertation, you got a doctorate. So he was a unique person with three PhDs and had some sort of very authoritative aura. And he said, look, if you want to get into the secrets of the rest of the 20th century, go to cybernetics. That's the field. I had him also for 1 year in school, high school, as a teacher, and my immediate reaction was then, at that time, I started to buy books, pocket books and so on, and they had a version of Norbert Wiener's book on cybernetics, it translated into German. And so I immediately bought the pocket book of Norbert Wiener, didn't understand a word, although it was in German, but it added to the mystery that this is something very important. I didn't understand the word, and I should stick to it because that will be very important for the rest of my life, according to the person who wrote this article in the year 1968.
Well, so I'm hoping it has revealed the secrets of the 20th century and the 21st to you. It's done a lot of that for me, so maybe we'll get into some of those. So what prompted this particular book that you've co-edited with Alexander Riegler and Stuart Umpleby? And initially, I know it was a large portion of it was initially came out as an issue of the journal Constructivist Foundations. And then with a bunch of additional material, it's now come into this book with over 60 articles in the final book. So what was the impetus for you and Alexander to start this project?
As I told you, I had started with close relations with Heinz von Förster around the year 85-86. And I think in the year 87, I invited Heinz von Förster for the first time myself to Vienna. And he came to Vienna and he had a big lecture there, and we didn't only have this lecture there, but Heinz stayed in Vienna within his favorite hotel, and we had a lot of possibilities to talk there while he was in Vienna for the first time. And I had someone from the Austrian radio, we had a wonderful 4 or 5 hour conversation with Heinz, which was then also very early, I think in 87 or 88, was used for a 1 hour broadcast by the main Austrian radio station, Austria One, and this was the title of the program was Menschenbilder, which means it was a focus on the biographies of a person, and he done a very, very good job in reducing the 4-hour talk into a very impressive 1-hour program of Heinz. And from these early talks onward, Heinz, who had a very characteristic voice and way of talking, and he told me about the mystery and the wonderful things of second order cybernetics, and one has to study, pursue not only cybernetics but second order cybernetics, and so I didn't have only have the mystery now of cybernetics but also the additional mystery of second order cybernetics, and from these from this period of 87 onward, I was constantly on track on what second order cybernetics meant, and I must say that only after, basically after finishing the book, I'm now in a position that I think I confidently know or can roughly say what this second order cybernetic means, according to Heinz, and in a way so that it really makes a difference to first order cybernetics. And so it was a very long story, a very long journey. Started in the story on cybernetics started in 68, the story on second order cybernetics roughly from 87 onward, and we are now in the year 2018, and only at this point I'm somehow confident that I can say something meaningful on the distinction between first order cybernetics and second order cybernetics.
All right, well, let's get into it then. So Heinz's distinction, of course, famously, when he said that first-order cybernetics is the cybernetics of observed systems and second-order cybernetics is the cybernetics of observing systems. But, of course, we also have this second origin moment that people like to quote. And I'm glad, so glad that you talk about the differences between these two origin moments, because they're often quoted they'll be quoted together in the same paper by various writers, but they seem to imply something not entirely the same. And the moment as I'm talking about is Margaret Mead at the very first meeting of the American Society for Cybernetics, saying that what if this organization that's a cybernetics organization conducted its business in a cybernetic fashion? And so, but there are some. There are some important differences, are there not, between those two sort of origin ideas and the way they get, I think, played out in the developments that you and your co-editors come through with the book in terms of endomethodologies and exomethodologies and second order science, etc. That those distinctions start with actually the fact that Heinz's definition and Margaret Mead's initial ideas are not completely the same. Is that true?
Absolutely. As Heinz would have said, absolutely. Absolutely true. I mean, he wouldn't have said true. Absolutely.
Yes.
Phenomenal. Because that's really, in recent, in the last 1 or 2 years, I had some lectures on. And I start with the proposition that we have too many twos around, which means we talk about second-order cybernetics, second-order science, and there are a lot of other differentiations with a second. And my current point is the following, that when Heinz wrote about second order cybernetics for the first time, he was referring to the observer, and you already mentioned the second order cybernetics is cybernetics, including the observer. You also noted very correctly, there's Margaret Mead, and she talked about cybernetics of cybernetics, and cybernetics of cybernetics in Margaret Mead's sense is absolutely not the same as second order cybernetics as hindsight. I came on on a promising track to dissolve the mystery of second order cybernetics when it was Heinz's 90th birthday. And for Heinz's 90th birthday, which was was a huge celebration in Vienna City Hall. The Vienna City Hall prepared 1,500 seats for this lecture, and there were more than 2,000 people. So there were 500 people standing to listen to Heinz. And in this context, we made a movie. I flew to Heinz and with a filmmaker, and she made a movie, and the big topic was Heinz was the leading question. You have now very limited time, and you should name the five most important publications you had. You had more than 300 publications, research reports, and so on, but you are only allowed to pick out five. And I, as an interviewer, made the mistake, and he had prepared four, not five, but I simply assumed that his first publication, this was a quantum mechanic investigation study of memory. This was written in 1948, and this was his huge entrance ticket to the United States. In the year 1948, he was still working with the Austrian radio station, had no PhD, no academic credentials, but in 1948, he wrote this book on memory, a quantum mechanic study, and then he mobilized his contacts he had in the United States, and through this publication, he came into the circles of Warren McCulloch and cybernetics and so on. So I simply assumed that this must be one of his most important publications. And he then ad hoc added this as the fifth one and said, okay, you know, if you think that's so important, I stick with it. I go with it. I telling you now about my five most important publications, starting with the memory booklet and his entrance to the United States. He then had one publication from 59 and 60. And his article on 61 on population bomb, and this was these two were very important for him, because here he used for the first time, and he was constructed the so-called Foerster equation, was a hyperbolic equation, and these two publications were for him extremely important. The third one was the book, the small article on eigenforms and objects, token. Then he said, but the fifth most important publication was this wonderful article in the lecture in Paris in 90 or 91, and I don't have now the exact title in front of me, but I was extremely surprised. And look, Heinz, what are you talking now about? But he wrote so many important and this very strange article is one of your four most important publications. And we let him talk, recorded it, and so it was then in my list of Heinz's five most important publications. There was this strange short article lecture he had in Paris, and there was also at the end of it was an interview with, and this was also in this text, and I thought maybe he is now too old, 90 years old, then quite some time passed, and Heinz passed away as well. Then I read this article again. And I read this article again and again. And in recent times, I even found an article which was formatted in the way which was formatted by Heinz himself. And this type of formatting was not the same one which was, for example, used in the Springer volume, where this lecture is also included. And so suddenly I realized why this article is of such fundamental importance to Heinz. Because here he makes a distinction between, he's not talking about observer or observed system or so on, but he's talking about two fundamental attitudes or dealing with the world. And the first one is the traditional one of being outside, dealing with some sort of world as it is. And the second one is an attitude of being in the world, being part of the world, and not as an abstract observer, but as a researcher, as a human being, as a person. You are part of the world, and you give us an account of the world not as you see it only subjectively, but you are and the others, they are part of the game. And this distinction between, and then I'm made a distinction which could, you using some new words for it, and that's the exo and endo distinction. Exo is being outside and being looking at an objective reality. Endo is being part of the myself as researcher included. That's endo. And in the interview, he makes it then clear this is what he basically had in mind with respect to second order cybernetics. It was cybernetics from within. The researcher is part of the enterprise, and he is endo within. And if you read it, if you look at this article, then it becomes very obvious that this is the basic distinction Heinz was driving at, and therefore this article was of such fundamental importance to him. But it took me from 87, it took me almost 2015, 2016. So we are talking about 30 years of trying to get hold of this distinction.
I can't tell you how edifying this is for me to be hearing the story of one of my favorite scholars of cybernetics, being you, basically Portrait of a Slow Learner, which is really, I feel so much better about myself.
That's a wonderful metaphor. It's looking back at this way, I'm really a slow learner, and it's interesting also in terms of I was a particularly slow learner because I had was a very good friend also to Reinulf Glanville. And I learned about Reinulf through Heinz and so on, and from early 1990s, I invited Reinulf for the first time to Vienna, and we had a very, very close relationship, and I was then responsible also for editing the major work of Reinulf in three volumes, and he wanted to have it arranged in a very, very special way, which is so we had the normal edition of the three volumes of Reinulf, but we also had the black box edition of the, and we produced 50 copies of the Reinulf Glanville. The book was, three books were called the black box, and Reinulf wanted to have it as a black box. And so these very special 50 editions was looked the following way. If you saw them for the first time, you saw a black box. And then if you look at it more closely, you saw that this black box contained something. And if you then took out one book, this book was again a black box and was black. No title, no name, nothing on it, simply black. And you look the second volume, the same, quite black. The third one, totally black, no name, nothing. So you had a black box, three black boxes within a black box. And Reinulf didn't see this final edition materialized because, unfortunately, this was when we finished the black box of black boxes. Reinulf passed away. He had cancer and three types of cancer and passed away very, very quickly and at the end unexpectedly, so he didn't see his black box edition, but it's there. And Reinulf was also talking from the early 1990s to the year 2014 when he died, that he is the only one who had who is doing second order cybernetics. And he's talking about it more than 20 years. I heard many, many lectures with Reinulf, and we had one meeting place. This was a world conference in Orlando. And we used to go there, and we had stayed there for 1 week, and we had this routine of listening to the lectures in the morning. But in the afternoon, it was Orlando, Florida, summer, it was extremely hot. We were sitting on the pool, on the bar of the pool. And we talked about, in the most wonderful atmosphere, in the hottest atmosphere. We talked for hours about news within cybernetics and so on. And I stick to my being a very, very slow learner because you are the only one who does second order cybernetics. Assuming that I did second order cybernetics as well, but it took me. Randolph died, and there was a memorial volume, and I really started to write an article about Randolph, and suddenly, adhering to my metaphor of a, or your metaphor of a slow learning, suddenly I realized, oh God, he was correct. He was the only one who was doing second order cybernetics properly. And then I wrote an article about the research program of Randolph Ganville, and this is also an interesting version of second order cybernetics.
Mm-hmm. I believe the paper we've been talking about of Heinz's is Ethics in Second Order Cybernetics. Is that correct?
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. And of course he says, I don't think in that paper, but in another one, he asks the question, am I an observer who stands outside and looks in as God, Heinz, or am I part of the world, a fellow player, a fellow being?
This is exactly in this article, there's also another article of Heinz from the same time, also around 1990, on reflexivity, and these are the two authoritative texts where he really is also for himself serious of what second order cybernetics could mean, should mean, and what I then later on tried to say, look, if you second order cybernetics, it's this endo thing. You are with you can do endo sociology, you can do endo economics, you can do end of cybernetics and so on, but in all of these aspects, you are with it. You are part of the game. You are a fellow observer, and it's something like some weeks ago I wrote now an article about the most important Austrian physicist was Ernst Mach, who was a physicist of the second half of the 19th century, and I'm in reading various aspects of Ernst Mach, he had such a scope and breadth and he was also using in some of his work, he was explicitly starting with himself and with the way he sees it, this exoendo thing is not a new thing. It's a very old thing. If you go back to Ernst Mach in the 19th century, he used it, but he didn't make any major fuss out of it, but he used it in a very natural way. And within the group of constructivists, it's probably Francisco Varela who was the most explicit person following this path of being a fellow player, staying within, and it's this phenomenological notion in Varela, which comes, which is basically the same thing which Heinz wanted to adhere to or focus on, being part of the world, being a fellow player and not a part in the sense of separated.
Right. And it's, you know, all sort of facetiousness about your slow learning aside, there is something about these ideas that on the surface are so deceptively simple. Even back to first order cybernetics in terms of goals and feedback and self-correction, and then second order cybernetics, and this endo mode that you're talking about, well, you put yourself inside it. But it is a radical shift of epistemology when you look at the enterprise of science as it's done in the West. And not to pay lip service to the observer, but to keep the observer foregrounded and to look at all descriptions, even scientific ones, as the descriptions of an observer who is a part of the domain in which they're observing. I mean, in all those great sort of koans that Heinz would spin out, like, you know, a theory of a brain has to be able to write itself because a brain is needed to write a theory of the brain, and just never letting go of the embeddedness in our own descriptions, and then that there's an ethics involved, and that there's an epistemological humility that doesn't either collapse into kind of solipsism, but it makes the us responsible for our own descriptions, and that's work that Ranulf really, I think, advanced. And it takes a long time to grasp, I think, the full implications of what doing science or any kind of scholarship that is so prone to lapse back into this quote unquote view from nowhere, and to recognize one's own embeddedness and keep it foregrounded in one's work is actually a much more profound thing than it might seem on the surface.
Yes. And I should tell you an anecdote, which Heinz used to tell quite often. And it was an anecdote about Ross Ashby. Ross Ashby was the famous British cybernetician. Ross Ashby moved... In the 60s, moved to Urbana, to Heinz, to work there in Heinz's lab. So Ross Ashby was part of the biological PCL and worked with Heinz, cooperated with Tocton. And Ross Ashby gave lectures to students in Urbana. And Heinz thought, if you have Ross Ashby as a lecturer, this must be great stuff for the students, must be new. But after a certain while, students came to him, to Heinz, and said, look, Heinz, we tried to follow your advice. We took the course with Ross Ashby, but what he's talking about, that's so simple, that's so, I mean, we feel somehow offended and so on. Should we continue with the course? Heinz said, okay, I will talk to Ross. So some days later, Heinz came across Ross and in his friendly way said, Heinz said, Ross, students seem to be not 100% satisfied, maybe 99%, but not 100%. And do you have any reaction to this? They say that's so simple what you say. And then Ross smiled and said, Heinz, it took me more than 30 years to make it so simple. And so this was also, you don't find slow learners just in front of you now, me with 30 years, but... you have also Ross Ashby.
Yeah. So you're in good company.
You as well.
Yeah. And myself as well. So You and your co-editors identify what you call a five-fold agenda of second-order cybernetics that surfaces through the various contributions in the book. And I've made a disclosure in our introduction that I am one of the contributors. So the agenda number one, building an alternative general scientific methodology. Agenda two, building specialized endomethodologies for different scientific disciplines. The third is offering foundational frameworks as well as reframing and contextualizing research problems across all scientific disciplines. Agenda four, creating reflective circular practices within applied disciplines. And then agenda five, building special circular reflective approaches for special niches within artistic domains. So it's a pretty wide array of and different fields and interests in which these endo approaches have very deep ramifications for the type of work done. And I know that one of the key contributors to the book is Lou Kaufman, a brilliant mathematician, and his description of a reflexive domain, which becomes, I think, another way to understand second order cybernetics. And I know that you mentioned in the book that, you know, it would be good to expand Lou's article into an entire handbook on this notion. But can you say something a little bit about the notion of the reflexive domain and maybe how that plays out across the various agendas that you identify in the book?
In March 2018, I would say that in the book there's only what should be relevant for the book is only one basic distinction, and this is the Heinz distinction between being within a domain or being without a path and being following this path of objectivity. This is the major rule of the scientific game, and the rule of objectivity was is not a natural one. It had to be created, and it dominated science since throughout the 20th century. And the counterpart to the rule of objectivity is not pure subjectivity, so it's this being within a domain and being part of it. And being part of it is also what Lou Kaufman called the reflexive domain in its most general way. And I should add one point about Lou Kaufman and his importance and his immense, huge importance for the field of second-order cybernetics. And it was a lecture which Heinz von Förster gave on I think it was the 60th birthday of Niklas Luhmann, and the title of the presentation of Heinz was "How Recursive is Communication?" And here Heinz presented gifts for Niklas Luhmann, four articles. And I don't go into all four articles, but one of the articles was an article by Lou Kaufman, and the other one was by Karl Menger, and so on. But Lou Kaufman had estimated extremely highly by Heinz already in the year 1990s, when he had this presentation of Luhmann's birthday. And Lou Kaufman is really a giant now in the field of mathematics, cybernetics, systems theory, whatever you call it, he has. And it's one of my future projects as soon as I get have some repairs with respect to my health situation, but this should be over in 2020. And then I have one final book project. This is with Lou and editing a volume with relevant articles by Lou, plus writing and a proper introduction to his work. And then he is really terrific. And also, being a slow learner, I think it took me to the year 2016-2017 when I was able to talk with him for the first time on a rather similar level, so that he got interested in what I had to say, and I, of course, was always interested in what he said. And so we had some very lively discussions, and we were sitting in a restaurant, and they had this paper tower, paper on the table, and he started to write on the table, on the tablecloth, and I was starting to writing myself, and so we ended up after 2 or 3 hours with a fully written tablecloth paper, and but this I met this was possible for me in the year 2017, and I knew Lou from the 90s onward, when and I was simply too shy also to talk to him in a more open way. And then so it's another metaphor of being a slow learner.
Feeling like you can hold your own with Lou in a conversation is, that does not come easily. And it's not through any lack of generosity on the part of Lou Kaufman, who's such a warm person. But yeah, his thinking is such an advanced level that it's yeah. If you think that he might actually be interested in something you have to say, then you know you're doing something. Again, not through lack of his desire to be interested, but it's just his mind is certainly one that stands tall in this field, as you mentioned. But this notion, I find that his contribution to this book is another step in helping people who don't have his advanced mathematical skills, and there's not many who do, to understand the notion that one acts in a domain. The domain could be mathematics, any of these places where it's possible to do endo work, whether it's you're in the domain of mathematics, you're in the domain of cybernetics, you're in the domain of an artistic practice, as I am, and that you are in the domain, you are of the domain. When you describe the domain, you're describing something that includes yourself, and that your description changes that domain, and that the activities and descriptions of everyone inside the domain is changing the domain. And we're always in a state of whatever our current description of the domain is, which is not a description of a mind-independent reality, but there is a way that we can reach some kind of consensual descriptions that we can share, at least to a certain degree of certainty, but never total certainty, through, of course, the generation of eigenforms, etc. And that Lou's book really sets up that idea that one could think of every other contribution in the book as, here's another window into a reflexive domain, from Stuart Umpleby's descriptions of the International Cultural Affairs Group and their community development work, to Ben Sweeting's description of architecture, Bernard Scott's description of psychology, that it's the work, the people inside the domain change the domain, and then their descriptions of it continue to re-enter and change the domain itself. I think that chapter of Lou's makes that in some ways the most accessible that I've seen it.
Yes, exactly. Talking about Now, myself, being a slow learner, this year I will be finishing a book on, we'll call it Transcendental Cybernetics. And this will be more or less a formulation of the vision of Ranulf Glanville, as I see it now, with all the slow learning I had. And I will then try to get three books of mine in, not as a black box, but simply as three extremely very much related books which cover basically the one topic, being in the world, and that's the book, will be a book, the book on second order science, which is already in print, a book which I did with a Slovenian scholar, where we did worked on a second order analysis of a social survey. I mean, totally outside cybernetics systems theory and so on. It's on social surveys, but in a second order way and so on. And the third one is Transcendental Cybernetics. That's the Ranulf cooperating, and together they are extremely strongly interwoven. And it should be, the third book should be out then by September, October, and then I have a small hope that certain Tom Scholte will call, write an email first, and then we can set up a date. And
I think that's quite likely. And I could just say that your book about the social surveys would be an example of an endo mode, right? And the idea of the kind of second order.
It's okay.
An exo mode. Exo mode. That's what I meant to say. An exo mode.
Second order science, and it's an empirical study of doing second order science, which is not which doesn't follow the endo and exo distinction, but which follows the first order science, second order science distinction. But if I look at the watch now, it's almost 11 o'clock p.m. Vienna time, and this could be also the topic for our September or October meeting, to talk about the difference between first order science and second order science, and which is completely independent from endo mode and exo mode.
Okay. Well, thank you. You've already answered our traditional last question about what you're working on now. So do you feel the book, this will be my last question, the book, part of it was set out to see whether, you know, examine the idea that second order cybernetics had been kind of marginalized and that had been unable to penetrate the mainstream of academia. But you've concluded that there is a fairly promising future for second order cybernetics. Is that true? And can you say something about what you think it might still do?
Yes. I mean, I was talking about maybe the whole interview on the future of, and it's not, the most important thing is, if you look at this endo-exo thing, it's not about cybernetics. It's about whatever you do, whether you do sociology, economics, cybernetics, systems theory, architecture, literature, whatever. You can do it in two different ways, and there's a very bright future if you do it in this endo mode, whatever you do, and then that's the most important thing now as a slow learner, as I see it now.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time, Carl. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And yes, I'm looking forward to the fall when we can have you on again to discuss particularly your work on Ranulf, who is another amazing like giant of the field, whose work is we're spending a lot of time with in the years since his passing, and continuing to recognize his tremendous contributions. And you can explain to us why he really was the only person doing proper second order cybernetics in those years. Okay, thank you very much, Carmen.